WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Two adults have died and at least five other people critically injured in the crash of a charter bus carrying Long Island, New York high school students to band camp. The bus veered off of I-84 and tumbled down a ravine about 45 miles northwest of New York City. Governor Kathy Hochul.
While it's preliminary, it is likely that a faulty front tire contributed to the accident.
More from WCBS TV's Allie Bauman at the scene.
The National Transportation Safety Board will send a team here to investigate. They're expected to arrive on scene by tomorrow morning. The high school tells us it's trying to reunite students with their parents now. Some students told us earlier that this is so devastating, it's something they never expected could have happened.
No progress yet on Capitol Hill when it comes to keeping the government open past the end of the month. The latest from CBS's Scott McFarlane.
With a deadline looming for a painful government shutdown,
the resolution is not adopted.
Things continue to fall apart in the U.S. House.
I don't know what direction they're coming from.
A handful of Republicans, some of whom oppose sending more aid to Ukraine.
I've been no on Ukraine the entire time.
Continue to jam House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who's been trying and failing to pass bills to keep the government open with Republican votes only.
President Biden held a bilateral meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House today.
Mr. President, the brave people of Ukraine, and that's not hyperbole, the people of Ukraine have shown enormous bravery, has inspired the world.
Mr. Biden has announced a $335 million aid package for Ukraine. With stalled gun safety measures on Capitol Hill, President Biden is creating a new White House office. CBS's Willie James Inman explains.
The White House is going to use this office to respond to any crisis that develops with gun violence. If there is a mass shooting, they're also going to use it to prevent gun violence.
Years in the making, Florida is now getting a fast train with its first paying customers riding the rails tomorrow. CBS's Peter King explains.
It's called Brightline. It runs between Orlando International Airport and Miami, and it could be a godsend for anyone who hates driving Interstate 95. CEO Mike Reininger calls it
safer, that's greener, that is a great value proposition. It's fun to do, and it's a hassle-free sort of travel experience.
Passengers who've tried a shorter route in South Florida like it.
It seemed like the coolest way to get down to Miami. I don't think the price is too bad.
Neon yellow trains will go as fast as 125 miles per hour. Brightline has made a $5 billion bet that private corporation will carry as many as 8 million passengers a year between here and Miami. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. 1 year ago, construction workers in Delafield discovered the decomposed body of a Waukesha woman.
After a year, homicide charges have now been filed. Police say the man charged with her murder, Matthew Paul, is the father of her child, and they had an on-and-off relationship spanning 20 years. While the cause of her death hasn't been disclosed, there is substantial evidence implicating Paul, including surveillance footage, cell phone data, and his online activity. He faces charges of first-degree intentional homicide and hiding a corpse. The reason for the delay in charging the case is not known. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Waukesha County Technical College has unveiled its new 1,800-square-foot esports lab, featuring 18 fully equipped gaming stations. The goal is to attract new students to the college by providing a cutting-edge gaming facility. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Red Delicious, Honeycrisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media,
Media, Ontario.
The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens.
Today, I am talking to the owner of Funky Fresh Spring Rolls, my friend, Truman McGee. From an environmentally friendly perspective, yeah. The fact that it's frozen means that it's not going to waste.
I am a cereal strawberry abuser. If you're a fruit and you're watching this, stay away from me, okay? Do not jump in my shopping cart because I will let you die.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
The Todd Alba Show.
Two kinds of politicians, those who want to be and those who want to do. Tommy Thompson, John McCain, I would put Tony Evers in this category. They're guys who are running because there were things that they wanted to do.
The Todd Alba Show.
Now contrast that to Hillary Clinton, I would argue, or Donald Trump. Sure, there are things they want to do, but ultimately, they are like Scott Walker. They were people who want to be.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at therickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about, but thank goodness for Joe Manchin. Thank goodness Joe Manchin is in the U.S. Senate. Thank goodness the good folks of West Virginia have put a guy in the U.S. Senate who cares about clothing, cares about suits. In fact, he is right now, as we speak, circulating a petition, because he's going to get something done, circulating a petition to reestablish the dress code to bring, well, I don't even know why. It's just one of those things that just... Okay, this rises to the level of action. This is what they do something about. We should be losing our minds over this. The fact that this is a U.S. senator is now this is going to be his legacy. This will be his legacy. We will make sure that this is on his tombstone. He saved the suit. And yet, they've done nothing. Nothing whatsoever to help bring down childhood poverty. Nothing to help working people. Nothing to make lives better, revive the American dream, invest in the future. None of that. But the suit, That's what has to happen. And I got to be honest with you. I don't care whether you wear a suit or not. I actually think you should dress appropriately in institution of high esteem. I do have some beliefs that you should show respect. I wouldn't show up in sweatpants and a t-shirt to a Senate hearing. But is this the biggest problem a U.S. senator has? When West Virginia is one of the poorest states in the entire country, and I would have to ask, how many people in West Virginia could afford a suit? Now, this is one of these moments where my mind goes, I want average, everyday working people in the halls of power. I want a truck driver, an electrician, a carpenter. I want somebody like that to be able to go to the Senate and help make laws to make people's lives better. And I get that, you know what, suits are expensive. And if that were the argument that, I'm struggling, but I'm going to wear decent clothes, I'm going to wear my Sunday best. How many people in West Virginia don't have a suit? How many people in this country can't afford to dress in a suit every day? This is elitism. This is snobbish. This is ridiculous. Because again, If all of our problems were solved, if we didn't have one of the highest child poverty rates in our country's history, if we didn't have homeless veterans, if we didn't have people who can't afford to buy a home, if we solved all of that, then you go, hey, you know, we did all the other work. It's time to talk about dumb stuff. But yet the guy who was the driver, one of two Democratic votes along with every Republican to make child poverty great again in this country, this is what he chooses to do. Now, again, this is what's made the right lose their mind. They're, oh my gosh, they're defacing, you know, the people who defecated in the halls of the Capitol. They're concerned about people wearing suits now. If you listen to right-wing blather, this was an issue. I can't believe it's an issue, but it is. And, you know, today I spent a couple of minutes doing the rounds of the dial, listening to the right-wing bloviators, our outrage merchants on the right. And it was interesting listening to them complain about how Joe Biden has increased childhood poverty. It's interesting how they're able to spin that, because not one Republican, not one conservative, not one good God-fearing, child-loving conservative voted to feed hungry children. Oh, Rick, you're being hyperbolic. Childhood poverty just went up by 60% because we gutted a program that we found that worked. If you give families an extra $250 a month in assistance to make sure that they can put food on the table, they do. It's amazing how that happens. And yet, because of our esteemed senator from West Virginia, and again, every single Republican. Now, what's interesting is I had this little back and forth today, because the Tim Scott thing, just ridiculous. The fact that Tim Scott said that every worker who strikes should be fired got the attention of a small Republican Party chair, or, you know, a small Republican Party county committee in Minnesota. And good on them for, you know, calling on Tim Scott to recant the comments. But I said, you know, look, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. And I say this all the time. There's nothing new here. Anybody who listens to the show knows that's what I believe, because it's what I've seen. Don't tell me things. Don't give me words. Show me, give me actions. And the actions have all been, hey, let's attack working people. And it's what they've done. So I went, we had this little back and forth, and I said, look, Tim Scott is another Republican who hates working people. Republicans hate working people. And, you know, they responded with a, you know, this is a funny thing to post on a post by Republicans denouncing anti-worker crap from Tim Scott. And look, the reality is, on an individual level, to an individual Republican, yeah, good on you for coming out and speaking up. But excuse me for not applauding you or praising you for being part of a party that on the national stage, when they had their little presidential debate, when all of those people who were, and wait for the next debate, they're going to all be trying to trip over themselves to attack the UAW members and the workers who are demanding better wages, hours, conditions. They are going to trip over themselves to echo what Tim Scott and Nikki Haley have been saying. But excuse me for looking at the Republican Party, who has pushed policy, who has an agenda to destroy workers' rights, who keeps appointing people to positions of power on courts across this country, who are destroying the ability to fight for those better wages, hours, conditions. Excuse me for not bowing down and going, oh my God, a good Republican. There's one. And look, I applaud you personally. I got to question why you're part of a party who hates working people. But this is what it is. The fact that individually you've come out against this doesn't forgive your party from doing all of the horrible stuff that they have done the last 40 years. I keep coming back to working class issues. They resonate with voters. Bidenomics is actually resonating with workers. When you start talking about jobs, you start talking about the economy, when you start actually doing something. Now, again, I go back to Trump. Now, remember, Trump is the standard bearer for the Republican Party, a guy who has crossed the picket line. He is a scab. Crossed the picket line. That's who the Republican Party is. Now, there may be some individuals who hang around and say, no, that's not me. Well, you're guilty by association because your party hates working people. Look at the policies. Don't care about your words. And now look at the words of the leaders of the party. But here's the thing. When Donald Trump was in office, and look, I gave the racists and the misogynists and the homophobes a small pass. I know people on the left think every Trump voter is a racist, a homophobe, and a misogynist. I don't believe that. I think in 2016, there were some people who believed Trump was going to be the guy who was going to bring jobs back. He was going to be the guy who was going to save the auto industry. And remember the Lordstown lie. Let's never forget that, because there were people whose lives have been upended because they didn't take job transfers because they believed Trump. They stayed in the Lordstown area. They stayed because, hey, Trump's going to bring those jobs back. He's going to bring back the golden age of the economy. Because Trump is a good con man. He's a good used car salesman. He sold a good portion of this population on the idea that he was going to be the one to bring back the prosperous past, the jobs that were able to support a family. And you know what's interesting to me? All of those Trump supporters, all of those red hats who are attacking Sleepy Joe or, you know, Dementia Joe or whatever they come up with, he's actually the guy who's doing all of the things that they thought Trump was going to do. And that's what I just find kind of ironic, which is why Bidenomics is working. And when you start talking about the things that they're doing, it resonates with people. And once we can get past the red hat, blue hat stuff and start talking about, green, I think you're going to have people come around. Now, like I said, you know, the right wing outrage machine, all they keep feeding people is, you know, Joe Biden increased child poverty. Never a mention. Nary a mention that every Republican voted against continuing that child tax credit. That to me, and look, you know, part of me says it's just them, you know, being dishonest, being disingenuous, cherry picking their information, you know, having to be on script because we've got to attack Joe Biden at every opportunity. But part of me goes, I don't think they care because they know what they're feeding their audience. Now, Rupert Murdoch, the head of Fox, stepped down today. I guess his son's now going to take over. We'll see how crazy Fox gets now. But the fact that he said, look, Sean Hannity's retarded and so is half the American people. That's what he thinks of the people who watch Fox News. So when do we go, no, we're not going to do this anymore? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Are you as upset about the whole suit thing as I am? Because it's got me pretty upset. Let's go with that. I can't say the real words. The truck driver in me will come out, and that is a bad thing. I don't have the money to pay the FCC fines. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back after this.
We'll be right back. We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I love John Fetterman's comment yesterday. He said, if those jagoffs in the House stop trying to shut our government down and fully support Ukraine, then I will save democracy by wearing a suit on the Senate floor next week. And I would have added, pass a bill that ends childhood poverty. And maybe he'll wear a zoot suit. Who knows? I'll dress up as a clown. I'll do whatever you want. Just get things done. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you? Insane!
Insane.
I got it.
So is Sarah Burris on tonight?
No.
Oh, darn.
She is in Las Vegas.
Oh, well, I hope she wins big.
Makes two of us.
I knew they were going to do this over the suit. The dress code. Remember a few days back when I called in and said that I really didn't care what they wore as long as they did their work, because I knew they were going to do this. And Joe Manchin, he just jumps right in there. It's crazy.
That's the right response there. That's the right response.
Yeah, I know. It's just, you just shake your head and go, really? What are y'all supposed to be doing besides getting outraged over make-believe stuff and stuff that you just come up with because you got to make it look like you're doing something.
Yep.
But I was amused, I guess is the word I want to say, to see that Fox is being put under new management, so to speak. I'm just wondering if the Sun is as greedy and as inclined to twist things as his daddy is.
I'm going to go five times worse.
Oh, wonderful. Just what we need. So we're saying now that they're going to be right along with that ON or ONN or whatever it is. And,
I think they're gonna make crazy great again.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I guess we should sit back with our popcorn and see, just how crazy they can go. Frankly, I think we ought to pass some new laws. First of all, we need to, number one, Joe needs to go. We need to build some more mental health facilities. And then we need to pass a law that says if you start, saying certain things, and I really don't want to hear that you can't do it because it's against somebody's rights. I really don't want to hear that. I don't care, because the Republicans wouldn't care.
Well, we used to do it. We used to do it back in the old days, Alice. If you acted up in public a little bit too much, the guys with the white coats would come by and take you away. Here, we got a nice jacket for you. It's got long sleeves.
Hey, I think we need to bring it back. I'm telling you. it's just crazy. We need to do these things because the insanity is multiplying daily. And I'm just going, I often wonder about my own mental health, but that's a normal thing. So for y'all out there, if you wonder about your mental health and you think that you're crazy, you're not.
There you go.
Because that's true. It's very true. Because if you really do have a mental health problem, and I'm talking along the lines of being psychosis or borderline personality or what have not, then if you think that you don't have one, you don't. But anyways, you have a good evening.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I mean, you know, at the end of it, you know, I talk to myself quite often. Some of the best conversations I ever have. this cracks me up. This made me laugh today. Very few things about Trump makes me laugh, but this, and I've got to get the Cassidy Hutchinson book. I've got to try and find out. I don't want to buy it, but I got to find out who the publisher is and see if we can get them to send us a review copy, maybe get her on the show. Evidently, according to The Guardian, do you remember when Trump was refusing to wear a mask and would go to events without a mask on? Well, it turns out, according to Cassidy Hutchinson, and she's the reason for it, that the reason he didn't wear a mask anymore after this visit to a factory, he put on a white mask and then asked one of the staffers what they thought. And what Cassidy Hutchinson writes is, "I slowly shook my head. The president pulled the mask off and asked why I thought he should not wear it. I pointed at the straps of the N95 I was holding. He was looking at the straps of his mask. He saw they were covered in bronzer." I'm going to let the laughter go. Evidently, Trump said, why did no one else tell me that? I'm not wearing this thing. Evidently, he didn't want to wear a mask because his makeup would smudge. His makeup would smudge. Oh, boy. Yeah, okay. There you go. The Lincoln Project, former Republicans turned somewhat sane. They have a new ad out that's portraying President Biden and his age as an asset, saying, look, his age and his experience are an asset. And I agree. I agree. His experience, very much an asset. Age, still kind of a problem. But guess what? Age a problem on the other side, too. Do I wish Joe Biden were 20 years younger? Yes. Do I wish he could give better speeches? By every measure, yes. But here's the thing. The policies that they're moving, I'm thrilled with. Told someone today, just what he's done with the National Labor Relations Board makes me happy. That's the reason to vote for him. The fact that we're going to potentially make organizing and reunite this country by reunionizing, to me, is a great idea. Good thing. The reason that I am all behind him. Now, the problem is we've got a Republican Party hell-bent on destruction, again, holding the country hostage. And I think right now, we're ticking down less than 10 days towards another shutdown that there doesn't appear to be any end in sight, because you have people who really want to burn the house down. And I've said a million times before, these are people who they want to push the button. They want to flip the switch. These are people who would, without question, they do that experiment where you push a button and you don't know, you could be electrocuting someone or you could be feeding someone. You don't know, but these are the people who would just be pushing the button like crazy in the hopes that they were electrocuting people. Cause I think that's where their mind goes. But here's the thing. Quote of the day. And again, remember, go back to when Kevin McCarthy was going through all of the fight to become speaker and the 15 or 20, whatever votes it took to make him speaker. I said, I want this for him. I truly want him to be speaker. I truly want him to have this honor of waking up every morning thinking about all the crazy people in the Kook caucus. I want him during the daytime to have to deal with all of their shenanigans and nonsense and, people leaving draft proposals to throw him out of office in the bathroom. And then at night when he goes to bed, I want him to think about the last thing he thinks about is Scott Perry and his Kook caucus doing more things to damage the country. I want him to have the acid reflux. I want him to have the burning throat. I want him to not sleep. Because I want this for him. I want him to be speaker having all of these problems. Now you've got McCarthy, who told reporters about the House voting down a defense bill. He said, this is a whole new concept of individuals that just want to burn the whole place down. That doesn't work. Yeah. And you know who knew that before you got the job? The rest of us. So here's an opportunity for him to possibly, you know, reach out to Democrats. Will he do it? I doubt it. But I was thinking about it today. This is about where John Boehner would be crying. Here's the thing. They couldn't even vote to adjourn. They couldn't even vote to allow themselves to go home. That's how dysfunctional our House is right now. That's how dysfunctional the Kevin McCarthy era has been. And is it his fault? No. Because the GOP, they've lost their minds. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day nearly 500,000 textile workers from Maine to Alabama walked off the job in a general strike. The United Textile Workers had launched an organizing campaign the year before. Within months, their membership had grown from 15,000 to well over 250,000. Working conditions and pay were abysmal. Normal work weeks averaged 55 hours. Child labor was widespread, and workers were always in fear of mill closings, pay cuts, and firings for suspected union activity. In the South, the industry had essentially been in a depression since the early 20s. The key issue was the stretch out. Workers were routinely expected to complete an increasing amount of work at the same rate and wage. For a brief moment, workers hoped their conditions would change when President Roosevelt signed the Code of Fair Competition the previous summer. It raised wages, limited hours, and prohibited child labor. It also allowed for union organizing. But the mill owners maneuvered around the code effectively, and the Textile Relations Board refused most workers' complaints. Fed up, workers walked out of the mill by the hundreds of thousands. They used the flying squadron tactic employed by Minneapolis Teamsters earlier that year, traveling from town to town, from mill to mill, calling workers out on strike. Mill owners were shocked. Within days, strikers confronted thousands of police and scabs. More than 40,000 National Guardsmen were called out in 16 states. Over the course of the strike, 16 people would be killed and hundreds more injured. After 22 days, union leaders called off the strike when President Roosevelt promised a government survey of industry conditions. It was an outrage, a betrayal, and a defeat felt for decades. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Oh, thank God for Ted Cruz. Once again, the far right-wing U.S. senator is saving you and me from a political horror that doesn't exist. This is Ted's specialty, for he seems unable to deal with the real economic and social problems that workaday people actually have. Thus, he constantly tries to divert attention from his senatorial incompetence by staging embarrassing political stunts, such as his furious fulminations against Big Bird, Mickey Mouse, and other fictional characters. Unable to triumph over them, however, Cruz is now conjuring up entirely fictional conflicts to let him, a Harvard-educated elitist, pose as a hero of working-class commoners. Beer drinkers, for example. The Cruiser recently swooped onto a Republican TV show squawking like Chicken Little that Joe Biden intended to restrict us Americans to only 2 beers a week. Oh, the horror! What is it with liberals that want to control every damn aspect of your life, squealed the senator, who, by the way, does want government to control every woman's reproductive rights, people's voting rights, the rights of labor, what books people can read, etc., etc. But Ted's in a tizzy over Biden's 2-beer limit. Only, there's no such thing. Actually, Biden has said nothing about beer. Zero, zilch. Joe's kinda busy. You know, Ukraine, global warming, healthcare, real problems. So, unlike the little senator from Texas, he doesn't have time to play political pickleball. This is Jim Hightower saying, embarrassingly, such other GOP officials as Iowa Senator Joni Ernst have joined Cruz's screwball crusade to stop Biden's non-existent beer bust. It's like they all went to clown school to learn to be senatorial. As for Ted, his nonstop series of nutty PR antics reveals that he is to a real senator what near beer is to beer, only not nearly as close.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting story over at The Economist. Yes, I sometimes read The Economist. I don't subscribe. I think it was Sarah Palin who, when she was asked, what magazines does she read? She threw out The Economist. Yeah, most people don't read The Economist unless they're in the dentist's office. But I happened to catch this article on climate change. And look, they're coming at it from an economic standpoint, which is, and we've been talking about this for a while. Look at Florida, for instance. Insurers are leaving the state. It's a boom state where, thousands of people are going. You would think more customers, higher density, more profits, especially considering that Florida's homeowners policies are probably, I think, are right up there with the highest in the country. They're, what did I see the number? Like $6,000 a year is the number. The average home insurance premium, $6,000, three times the national average, up 42% year over year. Yeah. And you would think, hey, what profit, $6,000, that's a huge amount of money. You would think insurers would be flocking to get people to pay, $6,000 a year. Problem is, they're not. In fact, you look at Florida, as we've talked about before, there are, I think at least 15 that have left the state, or limiting their access in the state. You've got seven others that are insolvent. You've got all these people going, maybe not. Maybe we're not. Now, I love this guy on, he does one of the, it's one of the video, Instagram, TikTok, one of them, Reels, YouTube, whatever. It's one of the short videos. There's this angry dude. And I don't know what his name is, but he yells a lot. He's an old guy, wears glasses, always in a suit, and he yells a lot. And profanity out the wazoo. And he said, and I'll never forget this because I wish I could find the clip. He said that global warming's a hoax because people are still building in Florida and insurance companies are insuring them and banks are underwriting the loans. If this were real, then no one would underwrite this stuff. And I got to find that. So if someone knows where that is, please send it to me, because this is one of those moments where you go, right now, it's beginning to happen. We're at the beginning of the insurance companies who are in business not to protect you, not to make sure that you're well, not to make sure that you're made whole in your moment of crisis. They're in business to make money. Pure and simple. They're not in the business of rebuilding the country. And I was amazed at this Economist article that pointed out in Santa Clarita, 85% of the properties in one of the Santa Clarita zip codes were dropped by their insurers between 2015 and 2021. 85%. Now, the thing is this is one of those moments where you go, what do people do then if they can't get insurance? Well, you're on your own. Now, understand, this is an area that was, devastated by fires, and insurers lost their, what. But, it's always one of these things, either act of God or we just ran out of money. And then who picks it up? The taxpayers. We get stuck holding the bag. And I'm looking at this story. And again, today I had that conversation with someone who bought into the, it's all a hoax. It's all not real. No bad things are happening. You're just looking at the wrong stuff. And I'm going, I don't know. Wildfires seem to be more. Hurricanes seem to be more. Weather seems to be much more extreme. Something's happening. Whether you believe it's man-made global warming, whether it's just a cycle of things getting worse, don't care. What's happening is these insurers are going, we're not gonna keep losing money. Now they point out that in Texas,
you go along with Texas, which has been one of the fastest growing states in the country, they're vulnerable to huge storms that form in the Gulf of Mexico. You've got Florida, who grew at a big rate. In fact, grew twice as fast as the country did between 2000 and 2020. They point out that by 2015, the value of insured properties in the Gulf and Atlantic coasts, $13 trillion. Who can insure that? Reality is none of these companies. And we're moving to riskier places. And by moving to riskier places, more bad things are happening to people. You go to an area where you're going to have wildfires, don't be surprised if it happens. You're going to move to an area where there are hurricanes, don't be surprised when there are hurricanes. And you've got these insurers are going, you know what, we're not going to write as many policies in these vulnerable areas because we don't want to be on the hook for it. You know, insurance companies sell you an insurance policy hoping you'll never use them. We've had homeowners insurance. I've owned a house, let's say 30 years. We filed one claim in 30 years. I know people who have never filed a claim in 30 years. Those are the people that insurance companies want. Not someone who lives in an area where, oh, you know what? Hurricane, took the roof off. I need a new roof. Oh, wildfire came by and burned down the barn and half the house. They don't want that. And the question then becomes, in these places where all of these people live and have built their homes and their lives, if insurance companies aren't going to do it because it's not profitable. And interestingly enough, these are in very Republican areas most of the time, who hate government, by the way. Who's going to be the backstop? And look, it's all the coastal states who are in this. That becomes the question. How much are we willing to be on the hook and still not do anything? I mean, this is my frustration because this person I was talking to today, believes we shouldn't be doing anything. Electric vehicles are terrible. Electric heat pumps are terrible. Solar panels are ridiculous. You know, just went down this whole list of, Red Hat club member card kind of stuff. And I don't know how in this day and age, hearing stories like this, and we've been talking about this for a while, where the moneyed interests are saying, things are happening. I don't know when it shakes us awake to where we do something. I'm not quite certain there. But I look at this and even if you don't believe in climate change, what Joe Biden is doing, I think, is important because it's moving us in a direction that the next generation of jobs, the next generation of investments, the next generation of moving us to, renewable. I was asking this question today because, this person told me, everyone's bought. They're all bought and paid for, all the politicians. I'm going, well, maybe so. But who are they bought and paid for by? Are they bought and paid for by people who want to help or ones who just want to help themselves? The oil companies have had, the best of times, best of luck, best of fortunes for the last, 50, 100 years. The reason we haven't moved towards renewable energy is because of the oil companies who want to make sure we're still hooked on the juice. And, I said, look, had we followed Carter's plan, of which by, I think today is his 99th birthday, if I'm not mistaken. And happy birthday, Mr. President. Had we followed his vision back in 79 and put solar panels on homes and move towards some renewable energy sooner, we'd be much further down the road. And, I said, look, we start off by mandating all new construction have some bit of energy independence. You start off maybe with, geothermal. You start off with electric heat pumps. You start off with solar panels on the roof, whatever. But mandate that every home built, every building built has some measure of renewable energy towards it. You know, every roof should have solar panels. That's simple. And you can do that by saying every new construction building, that's what they got to have. And then you start moving towards, hey, you know, we're going to incentivize people to put it on their own homes. I know with our bill, we produce about 40% of our electricity. We have a reasonable system on our roof. It's, what, about 12, 13 years old now? I think everyone should have something like that. Because it'll help get us off of the dirty stuff. It's going to help get us away from, you know, from pulling stuff out of the ground, help make us a little bit more independent. But it's going to slow the growth of our use of oil. It's going to slow the growth. I'm going to make the prediction we're never getting off of oil. It's never going to happen. And I know my environmental friends are going to lose their mind. Yes, we can do it. No, you're not. But maybe slowing it, maybe, you know, even just a small cutback is helpful. And we do that by smart policy. And I know that's all real wonky science stuff that they get into. Here's where my thought is. This is the next generation of jobs. This is the next American industry. This could have been the American industry. Again, you know, Reagan comes in, fires the Patco workers, shot heard across the boardroom, go get those working people. But he also ripped the solar panels off the White House and told Big Oil, hey, you know, the next 40, 50 years, that's your present. You're welcome. And look what we've been stuck with. And yeah, I know, I get the talking point. Well, we're going to trade Middle East oil for Chinese batteries. We don't have to. We can build those here. And that's what the president's talking about. That's part of the jobs part of this, which is why it's a winning message. Bidenomics is a winning message. When you start talking about addressing the climate and creating jobs so that communities that have been left behind for the last several decades have a shot to get ahead, have a shot to grab their identities back, those are winners. And look, I think Biden's got a really good message going into 2024. The fact that our economy created more jobs quickly and did it more efficiently and quicker than virtually every industrialized country in the world. The fact that our inflation wasn't as bad as the rest of the world. I know it's bad, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been. If we had somebody, like Donald Hoover Trump. You know, the fact that you've got a president who's talking about, you know, how do we make sure that families can get by? You got somebody who wants to not just talk about investment in infrastructure, but actually doing it. Actually talking and doing help for small businesses. You know, Biden may not be great on Twitter, but he's better than Trump was on the economy. And like it or not, the economy is moving in the right direction. And in 5-10 years, we're going to look back and we're going to be grateful for this moment. Even in the face of all the outright wing outrage merchants who want to keep us angry over suits. I still can't believe that. You know, Joe Manchin's going to save the country, going to save the world for democracy by wearing a suit. Never mind those kids or infrastructure investments. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. There's a quick break right back after this. Stick around.
Open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith.
And this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1991. That was the day that members of the Culinary Workers Union Local 226 went out on strike against the Frontier Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. What they did not know was that the strike would last for more than 6 years, becoming one of the longest work actions in U.S. labor history. The Frontier was the second casino to open on the Vegas Strip in 1942. At the time of the strike, the Ilardi family owned the historic casino. The Ilardis were vehemently anti-union. They renovated the old facility and then reopened, refusing to sign a contract to pay its workers the same rate provided at most other Vegas casinos, claiming that the Frontier was too small to match the wages of the larger outfits. Management refused to budge from their position. In response, Local 226 members mobilized. The year before, Hattie Canty had been elected president of the local. She was a black mother of 10 children and a widow. She had worked as a hotel maid. Her leadership brought a new determination to the Culinary Workers Union. Local 226 set up 24-hour picket lines outside the Frontier. The strike was joined by Bartenders Local 165, Teamsters Local 995, the Operating Engineers Local 501, and the Carpenters Local 1780. The strike became an important moment in Vegas labor history, as other casino owners looked on, watching the labor battle unfold. The unions stood strong. The picketers demand that the owners should, quote, sell, shut down, or sign, became the call. In the end, the Ilardis decided to sell. The new ownership signed a union contract and rehired 280 striking workers. Triumphant union members cut a red ribbon at the hotel to mark their victory.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So the Main Street corporate-controlled media still wants to keep feeding us the inflation's bad angle, the economy's bad angle. And when I saw David Brooks trending on Twitter today, I had to know why. The New York Times columnist evidently went to Newark Airport and had lunch. Evidently went to the Newark Airport Smash Burger. I've never been there, so I don't know. But he tweeted out a picture of his meal, which was, you know, a decent hamburger, some fries, and some green stuff. You know, stuff that I guess you might put on a hamburger. I don't, but some people do. And it looks like he had something of a drink. And he said, this meal just cost me $78 at Newark Airport. This is why Americans think the economy is terrible. Now, on its face, you look at this, you go, oh my God, $78 for a hamburger and a drink. Oh, that's terrible. That's horrible. Now, look, I've been in airports. Airport food's expensive. Because they know they got you. You're captive. It's not like you're going back through security, catching a cab and getting out of the facility and then going back through security. They know you're not going to do that. So, yeah, they're going to jack up the price a little bit. That's going to happen. But $78? Holy wow. What could be in this hamburger? And I know it's the Wagyu beef, and that's, you know, that's a good thing. But as people decided to look into it, someone posted a picture of the menu, and the hamburger itself with the French fries and all of the lettuce, tomato, and onions and pickles and all that, $10.40. That's what the meal cost. $7.65 if you just bought the hamburger. Turns out 80% of Brooks' bill was his bar tab. 80% of the bill was his bar tab. So my mind went, you know, maybe New York Times maybe need to, oh, I don't know, pull back on David Brooks a bit, maybe a little rehab, or maybe get him another drink and tell him not to. Let's go to the phones. We got Steve on line one from Chicago. Steve, how are you?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. And I think that this is demonstrative of, you know, where we are in terms of media these days, because, yeah, there's this rush to get things off there, to get them in print, to get them on the air. And that's why they say that, you know, that journalism is history's first take on everything. The problem is that in our rush to get everything out there, you know, we sometimes forget to do things like fact-checking or, you know, putting things into context.
Or sobering
up. I travel a lot. And yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of traveling. So, yeah, you're exactly right. You know, ever since 9/11, they know that, you know, there's an inside and an outside the airport. Inside the airport is like its own little prison. And you're not going to go back through security, as you point out, to go out and get a bite somewhere. And that means that the people who actually have the licenses to serve food in airports, it's a license to steal in many ways. You're stuck. And let's face it, if your flight is delayed and, you know, it's going off in 3 hours, you're not leaving the airport. You're going to sit there, you're going to find something to eat at the airport. And then you might also have something to drink. And a lot of people do in order to pass the time. And then they wonder why their bill is so high. But this idea that, you know, that all of a sudden this is something new, again, context matters. What did he have to drink? You know, I can have, three drinks for $30. Or I could have one great shot of scotch for $30, $40.
So it was 12-year-old scotch, about. Is what they didn't okay. They didn't name what it was, but it was 12-year-old scotch.
Yeah, which isn't great scotch, by the way. But okay, but at the airport they're going to jack up their price significantly, and quite frankly, any bar they're going to do that. So yeah, these are real first world problems. That's the other point I wanted to make, because it's amazing that this is where we are. That, you know, these are people who can afford to travel, do travel, and this is their gripe in life. Oh my God, I was stuck at an airport and I drank and ate more than I thought I should have, or didn't look at the prices, and this was my bill. Well, geez, I mean, let me cry you a river. Perhaps you could ask somebody in the Ukraine if they'd be willing to send you some money, because, you know, there's nobody else suffering in the world. I mean, come on. I mean, a little bit of context here.
Yeah, but no, but it's the outrage candy, Steve. You've got to keep feeding people the outrage candy so that they can be upset about things and just not the right things. You know, like I started off with today, you know, Joe Manchin's out there. He's fighting to save the suit, Steve. He's fighting to save the suit. Screw those kids that are going hungry. But, you know, at least the people who took the food from them, they'll be wearing suits.
Yeah, I mean, and somehow all of this will spun into some sort of fault of labor, or people who are, you know, somebody who dropped out of high school and they're working in that kitchen back there and demanding $40 an hour. So that's why your bar tab at the airport and restaurant tab was so high. I mean, that's invariably what happens with this stuff. Yeah, we had to pay those people a lot of money, so that's really where your money went. Not that somebody's price gouging you at the airport, because they got I'm here in Chicago, and we have had decades of scandal with regard to how a lot of restaurants got those gigs. There's only so much said our two major airports, and we've had investigation after investigation as to how exactly did they get these gigs where you've got millions of people who are trapped in this location with no alternative. So, yeah, it's a recipe for corruption to no end.
I'm with you. Appreciate it, Steve. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
It is. It's a license to... You would argue to print money, you know, steal. He's right. I want to end this hour on good on the UAW. And we're going to talk about the strike here in the next hour. But good on the UAW. Sean Fain filed charges with the National Labor Relations Board against Tim Scott for his comments. Because, you know, look, you can't do what he did. Telling workers that they'll all be fired for striking is a violation of federal labor law, and it's not something becoming of a senator, according to Fain. And look, you know, if you listen to Tim Scott's spiel, you know, invoking, you know, Ronald Reagan, you know, Reagan fired those Patco workers. Tim Scott's going, no, we can fire anybody. It'll be interesting to see where this goes. Do I think anything's going to come of it? I don't. But the idea that someone is finally standing up and fighting back gives me great hope. But again, you know, the complaint accuses Scott of violating the section of the NLRA that lays out employees' rights to participate in labor actions. Within the past 6 months, they write, the employer has interfered with, restrained, or coerced employees in the exercise of the rights guaranteed in Section 7 of the Act. On Monday, September 18th, 2023, Tim Scott threatened employees with adverse consequences if they engaged in protected, concerted activity by publicly responding to a question about striking workers as follows. You strike, you're fired. With Jennifer Abruzzo at the NLRB, I gotta wonder where this goes. And could this be precedent setting? Because look, when the Republican debate happens, when it comes up here in a couple of days, at the Reagan...
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.